What's up? What's up? Hey there, this is Dominic here, your CFP on YouTube and founder of the Jumpstart Coaching Lab and host of Conversations for Financial Professionals. And although season six is officially in the books, I thought it might be fun to add a little bonus content to the mix. So on this episode, I was joined by my new friend, Akiva Ellis of Ballantine Partners and the Bemuse YouTube channel that she runs with the hubby. Akiva is a powerhouse in the financial services industry, having achieved a lot over a very short amount of time, including her master's in financial planning, the CFP designation, her CPA, as well as her personal financial specialist designation, and the charter special needs consultant designation. I know that's a mouthful, and as busy as she is with all of that, she decided to spend a little time with us today exploring the traditional and non-traditional paths into financial planning. She's especially a trooper for suffering through two power outages on my end, which brought some much needed rain to the Dallas area. We cover so much, including her journey, her advice for career changers looking to break into the industry, what firms are hiring for, and what she looks for specifically in interview candidates, and so much more. I really, really hope you enjoy it. And if you are new here, make sure you hit that subscribe button to let YouTube know that you want more content like this. And also let me know down in the comments, what designation you're considering? Is it the CFP? Is it the CFA? Is the CPA? Is it something else altogether? We'd love to know. Enjoy the episode. What's up? What's up? What's up, everybody? Get up, get your coffee. Well, I guess coffee for the West Coast, maybe. But if you are Central or Eastern, you should be up already. Maybe, you know, maybe getting some lunch or something like that. So we are here with another Conversations for Financial Professionals, the live edition. And we've got some real fun in store for you. Akiva Ellis is joining us. She's going to tell her story in just a second. But if you're joining us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, just drop some love in the comments. We would love to know where you're listening from and what's going on with you. We will have some Q&A towards the end, but I am so eager to dive into this topic with this guest, which I don't know. I don't know if she likes to be called the Michael Kitsis female version with all these letters behind her name, but oh my gosh, Akiva Ellis, you've accomplished a lot. You're at Ballantine Partners right now. You got your master's in financial planning, CPA, personal financial specialist, CFP, charter special needs counselor. I mean, you've got a lot of credentials, a very, very, let's say, storied resume. You've also got the Bemused podcast and YouTube channel that you run with your hubby. You've just been doing a lot. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited that I'm finally here. I feel we've been talking for so long and like finally we're able to actually collaborate on something. So super excited to be here and super excited for the conversation.
Yeah. It's so funny. You know, in these circles, people don't realize, and maybe they do, but the content creator space is so small. And sometimes you almost step over each other, like, you know, shaking hands with the next person. You're like, hey, what's going on? You know, so that type of deal. No, I'm really excited for the conversation too. I think this topic is very needed for the career changer out there. Looks like Elijah Juan Ridgeway is joining us. What's going on, my brother from Louisiana? Drop where you're listening from in the comments, whether you're on YouTube, Facebook, or LinkedIn. So yeah, this exploring traditional and non-traditional paths into financial planning. Very interesting subject. Like we were talking about in the digital green room before we started, you got people sitting for the CFP exam, you got FPA externship going on. There's a lot of things going on for career changers, aspiring CFPs, and all that kind of stuff. And I thought this would be a really, really good time to kind of dive into that. So let's talk about your background. Just, you know, I obviously gave the Cliff's Notes version of your resume, and you can, you know, extend that as far as you want to, but give us a little background on kind of how you got started in the business.
Yeah, for sure. So I discovered the field of financial planning pretty much when I was like a freshman, sophomore in college, around that time of life. So I did major in business. My degrees are in accounting and finance. But at that point in my life, I was really starting to learn a lot more about money myself, because I was at that point where I'm like, hey, I feel like I don't know anything about personal finance at all. It was something that we talked about at home. It was something that I was seeing out there. I didn't know anybody who was a financial planner. Like, I just did not even know this career existed at all. I literally happened to come across it on Google, like by just searching around things about money. I learned about the CFP. I'm like, oh, this is a thing. Like, people make money just like helping people with their money. Like, where do I sign? Like, I was sold. I was like, give me all of it. I'm done. I am ready. Yeah. And so I kind of
made that decision. What year was this in just context?
Yeah, so this was about 2014, okay. I think. Yes, okay. That would have been like the end of my freshman year. So this is like 2014 we're talking.
So what were there any other outside influences? Because you have a very similar money story as a lot of people, not necessarily of our skin color, but I think just in this generation too, that it's not, and maybe it is a cultural thing or not. We can unpack that if you want, but this we don't really talk about money at the dinner table type of deal, and didn't really know this stuff was around. And then you kind of go through self-discovery to really find the field. Did you have any other outside influences?
No, I really didn't. Outside of the fact that we didn't talk about money at all, and like going through, like doing the FAFSA, for example, was like one of the pivotal moments for me, where I'm like reading this form of like all these money terms, like what in the world does this mean? Like, I know nothing. I just was not okay with that. You know, I consider myself a pretty smart kid growing up, and I'm like, I know a lot about a lot, but this, I know absolutely nothing. So that's really, you know, in true Gen Z fashion, took to Google and just basically went down the rabbit hole of researching and learning things for myself. So that's really how I really just happened upon the field. It wasn't that anybody told me that it existed or that anybody was having these conversations with me or that I had any role models to follow who were in the profession. I literally just found it on my own searching on Google. And so my story is pretty unique in that sense. And that's why some of the work that I do today is just really, I'm really, really passionate about exposing this career option to other people, because I know if I didn't learn about it, there are probably tons of others like me who don't even know that this career exists. So that was really how I ended up here.
No, I have to double click on that word exposure, because you bring up a really great point on, you know, just there's a lack of conversation around, you know, a certified financial planner or financial professional, financial coach, all this stuff, you know, maybe in the last 10 years, maybe, and that's probably a stretch of the imagination. I know FinCon's been going on for about that long. So there was this popularization around the financial educator space that is, let's call it sans or without the certifications. But even certified financial planner, they've done a great job, but people still really just don't know about this path. So I'm glad you said exposure, because there is this, I think, this continuum that we have to create and be advocates for in the industry to continue to expose younger generations to what this career is, especially when you look at the numbers of people that are aging out and that are retiring from this industry and all that other kind of stuff. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the CFP demographics and, you know, it's really, really tough. Like, people like me are kind of like unicorns when you look at the numbers. When you talk about CFPs who are under 30, I think, which is like maybe what, 5% of us, and then adding on the additional layers of being a female financial planner, which is like 20-something%, and then Black CFPs, which is less than 2%, like very much a very small percentage of the CFP universe. And so the more that I think people know that, like, this is an option, this certification exists, this field exists, and it's a great profession. You know, they've also done the studies that show that people who are in this profession love it. I would hope that's the case with you, Dom, too, and, you know, myself. Clearly, we love what we do. So it's making sure that people know that, hey, this is an option for you, and there's room for you here at this table.
Yeah, yeah, love that, love that. If you're joining us on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter, we're talking with Akiva Ellis about this exploring traditional and non-traditional paths in financial planning. We're going to get into some really juicy stuff. So let's dive into defining these traditional versus non-traditional paths. I've talked about this before, and what I would typically say, just to make it really simple for those listening that may not know anything about this, is I would consider the traditional path as the one that has to do with regulation, because the Investment Advisor Act of 1940 is the one that says what investment advice is, how you can give it, what you need as far as certifications, blah, blah, blah. Then you have this whole world of do-gooders and some non-do-gooders of, let's call it, non-regulated financial advice from people on TikTok and Instagram and all different types of places. We have those, and that's what I've been calling the non-traditional. Would you define it the same, or would you have anything to add or take away from that?
Yeah, I think that is largely accurate. I mean, I kind of sit in both camps, which is, you know, an interesting perspective that I can bring to this conversation, right? I am a financial planner, but I also identify myself not just as a financial planner, but a financial educator, because a large part of the work that I do is around education. It's on, you know, media, it's on YouTube, it's doing podcasts, it's doing all of those things, TikTok, Instagram, you know, all the things the cool kids are doing these days, but, you know, are kind of the non-traditional ways that you can reach people and meet people and still get them the information that they need without necessarily, you know, mandating that they have to work with a traditional financial planner. So a way to kind of spread your impact and spread your reach and spread your message in kind of the off the beaten pathway.
I would like to highlight what you said, because I like that. Those non-traditional paths allow you to reach people in non-traditional ways. That's a perfect, yeah. That's a perfect way to sum that up, because I think, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you have a one particular approach to do something and it stops working or it's less effective, as an innovator, as an entrepreneur, you're forced to find different ways and different solutions to reach those people. And Maybe this is a little space to kind of talk about your YouTube channel and what you and Hovey are doing over there as financial educators, and then we'll shift back to the more traditional stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So my now husband and I have been on YouTube for over 4 years at this point. He is not a financial planner. He's just a super big money nerd, like a lot of people are. And so essentially why we decided to start this brand, and you know, since then it's grown into so many different areas, which I'll get into. But why we really started this was firstly because, you know, at this point in my life, we're talking now 2017, 2018, I had just graduated from college. I'm in my first big girl financial planner job. I'm doing my master's program. I'm learning so many things about money, about personal finance. And in my day job, I'm working with ultra high net worth clients, which is a lot of fun and a lot of opportunity for learning in and of itself, because there's just so much. The scope is just so much. And so I'm enjoying all of this, right? And at the same time, having no way to really pass that information along to other people who are more like me, right? People who didn't come from means, people who maybe have a similar background I have, coming from an immigrant family, just being able to share that knowledge with the masses. And so I essentially came up with the bright idea of doing a YouTube channel. I still try to think about, like, okay, what was I thinking when I did that? Like, I am not the type of person who likes to be on camera or out in public. I am very much introverted with a healthy dose of social anxiety. Like, what was I thinking? But it was a way to, like, get myself out of my shell a little bit. And so I kind of went to my then boyfriend, now husband, with the idea. I'm like, hey, what do you think about just starting this YouTube channel and talking about money? And he was game from day one. And so that's really how we started. So it's a mix of sharing financial information, education, as well as speaking transparently about our own money journey. We share a lot of our personal numbers on our channel. We do quarterly network updates. Everything you want to know about our financial life is on there, I promise. Yeah. Every line of our closing statement, like, we go into like unnecessary detail talking about our personal finances on the internet. But that's intentional too, because yeah, again, that's not an experience that we had growing up. And I felt like if we don't talk, we don't learn. And so we just like to be, you know, that sounding board, that safe space of people who come from those backgrounds can just come and share and know they're not going to be judged for whatever it is that they're doing, and we can all learn and grow and build together. So that was really the genesis of that. And, you know, we've been able to grow and reach so many people who otherwise we may not have reached or may not have gotten this information had we not started this brand.
No, I love that. I think, you know, the TMI around your own financial information is something that I've noticed millennials and younger really appreciate, the authenticity, the being genuine and open. Because I think for the long time, you know, I'm 46, so I've been in this industry a little while. I'm not really old, but I'm definitely not a spring chicken anymore. So, but I've been in this industry long enough to kind of see this evolution of the facade or the wall kind of coming down between this person that sits up in a, you know, suit and tie behind a mahogany desk and just points their finger, little scrawny finger at you about how bad you are financially. And, you know, they've got all the information and you're this woe is me little consumer. The tide is changing for a lot of reasons. I think mainly because the internet has made, you know, access to information pretty ubiquitous, right? That's been one thing. And then it's been things like what you're doing to reach people in a non-traditional way that allow them to feel safe and like, oh, you know, I'm not the only one out there. And so I think what you're doing is great. And I wonder what your thoughts are around career changers specifically that, and as we pivot to the more traditional path, that kind of look at your story and others that are similar and maybe think about integrating that type of approach, like just a personal, hey guys, this is where I'm at, while you're studying for your CFP or any of that kind of stuff. I don't want to feed you any ideas, but what are your thoughts about that as far as them getting into the industry in a non-traditional way like that?
Yeah, for sure. And we've definitely seen a rise in people who are doing this, right? They start out as financial influencers, right? That's kind of the catch-all phrase that we're using. People who are sharing financial education or sharing their money journeys on various social media platforms, right? So people start there and then they discover, I've seen financial influencers who then discover, hey, I actually want to deepen my knowledge some more, or I may actually want to shift a little bit into the more traditional routes. I'm going to go sit for my CFP. I'm going to go, you know, do these things, take these programs, actually do the education so that I can be a better service to the people who I'm teaching essentially online. So it's definitely becoming a more and more popular route I've seen over recent years. And so really, it's just about where you want to make the biggest impact and how your strengths really best suit the work that you want to do. And also the types of people who you're trying to reach, because the answers to those questions will help shape how you approach your entry into the industry and ultimately where you end up. You know, as I mentioned, I kind of started in a more traditional path and have since, you know, gone away from the more traditional path to include a lot more things that are untraditional, and have found a unique way to blend both of those worlds together, where I can still do traditional advising for clients at an established firm, but also, you know, being able to educate the masses with my social media platforms and the things that my husband and I are doing with the Muse. So I think it just comes down to, what is the impact you want to make on the world? Who are you trying to reach? What are your strengths? What are your skill sets? What, you know, kind of existing background do you have? And working that into a way that works best for you. There's no one right way to do this, no one right way to enter the industry. But any way that you can create an impact, you know, just go for it, essentially.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Brittany Castro, I had her on several episodes ago, and she said something very similar. She was like, you know, I didn't come from money. I didn't come from a background of, you know, financial professionals or anything like that. And so what, you know, she's like, my advice for any career changer would be just to go for it. You never know until you actually go out there and try it. Right. And I think, you know, what I work so hard to do on Jumpstart in my platforms is to kind of illuminate that, yes, there is no right or wrong answer per se. Maybe we'll get into some of the technical stuff, like, you know, because both of us have letters behind our name. You have way more than I do. And like, how do you make the decision on what you're going to go after? Like, when it comes to those designations, because, you know, I think there is this notion that, for whatever it's worth, that designations, you know, are signals to the public that, you know, denote your expertise. You know, people don't spend a lot of time and money for nothing on those. So like, they do mean something. How much they may mean depends on a lot of different things. What are your ideas there around designations as a whole? And then let's kind of narrow that down to what a lot of people that are watching this are probably concerned about, which is the CFP designation.
Yeah, so I have a kind of a love-hate relationship with designations. Like, I look at all my letters now and even I'm just like,
I can't tell.
Like, I'm like so obnoxious. I'm just like, how many letters? Okay, it unintentionally became this long, I promise. But I can give you some of the reasoning and the thought process I went through in getting each of these letters, if that's, you know, kind of a bit more practical. So as I mentioned, when I discovered this field, I was already in college. My major was my major. My school didn't have a financial planning program, which you're becoming obviously more and more popular these days too, where people are coming right out of undergrad with degrees in financial planning. That was not me. Like I said, I majored in accounting and finance. So I knew that, one, I wanted to have specialized knowledge in personal financial planning, because spoiler alert, they don't teach you that in business school. And two, I knew I did want a master's degree. And the reason why I wanted a master's degree is because I also, at that point, was still toying with the idea of teaching. Funny how I ended up kind of being an educator anyway. And I knew that most times you would need to have a master's degree to teach at a college level and all kinds of stuff. And so it wasn't that many more classes, you know, between the standard CFP education program and obtaining a master's degree. So that's just the route that I took.
Parenthetically, let's do that then. Mm-hmm. So did you do a master's of financial planning and then do a transcript challenge, or was it like the CFP education classes were integrated into that? I don't know if that makes sense, but like those are two different ways.
Yes, the latter. Yeah. Okay. So my degree program satisfied the CFP education requirement. It's one of their registered programs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that was the route that took. So I'm doing a CFP board registered program either which way. So I may as well just get a master's degree out of it.
Makes sense.
It was basically my thought process. And that way it also opened me up to, you know, different opportunities if I ever chose to pursue them. So that was like my thought process behind that. The CPA was literally just like, well, I have an accounting degree. I have the credits. I literally just have to do these tests and we'll be good. So that was basically my thing. It was like, I didn't go through all of these.
That's the hard part for most people.
It was hard. Oh, let me tell you, it was hard. Okay. It was very challenging. It was a trying time. Glad it's over. But that was really my thought process behind that, was like, I already have the education. I just need to do the exams. Of course, there are some cross-functional skills that are applicable to financial planning. For example, the concept of a balance sheet was never foreign to me. because doing accounting, that's, you know, what we were doing all day, every day, came very naturally to me. You know, dealing with clients who may have businesses, reading their business financials, which is kind of a part of the job as a financial planner when you're working with business owner clients, that all came very naturally to me. And then, of course, the obvious that people think about, which is personal tax planning, was also part of the game. So there are definitely some transferable.
All right, PSA, when you're in Texas and you haven't had rain for 4 weeks, don't schedule a live with a thunderstorm happening. but we're back. I think we're back, at least temporarily. So you were saying you were giving us your path, your degrees and your certifications and, you know, the overlaps between some of those and the rationale that caused you to go down that path. I wonder specifically about the CFP though, with career changers. You were already kind of on that track. What is your thoughts for someone that is no financial background? They just think they love this. Mm-hmm. Probably in the research phase. What would be your answer to them if they ask you, do you think I should do the CFP? What would be your answer?
Yeah, so my question back to them would be, how committed are you to this profession, to this field, right? If this is something that you're just like, let me try it out and see how it goes, mm-hmm. probably you don't want to make the commitment, because getting your CFP is a serious commitment, right? As we all know, we've been through it. There's the education that you have to do that sometimes costs money and time. It's a lot. You got to get the education. You got to study for the exam, sit for the exam, work for a certain amount of time in the industry in order to get this credential, right? So it's not just an easy lift, something that you can get done in the snap of a finger. So I think if you have decided that financial planning is going to be the industry for you, this is what you're going to want to do for the foreseeable future, for a sizable amount of your career or time of your career, then I would definitely recommend it. I'm also a CFP board ambassador, by the way. So I really love the CFP, as you see. And I think it's a really, really great profession great credential for those who are really committed to the profession. So that would be the line of thinking that I go through in telling someone whether or not they should go for the CFP. As long as you're committed to it, it's definitely like the gold star standard for the profession, rounds out your knowledge in a comprehensive way that you don't get with a lot of other programs or designations. So that's my thought on it.
Yeah, let's. I love that answer, by the way. I will go back to, kicking it back to them. I love that part because a lot of people that I've talked to jump headfirst into their CFP journey without, I feel, the right adequate amount of research, mm-hmm. talking to people that are already CFPs, that are already, you know, let's say steps ahead of them in the education or the experience process, just hanging around in different communities with that type of stuff going on, listening to podcasts, reading books. Like, I think you should really measure twice, cut once on this thing, because there have been so many people that have spent time and time and time, and you know, I know they get, what did they give me, 4 times to pass the test, something like that. Like, they'll just be, they'll be going through this process and it'll take a long time. They'll get frustrated and they're putting their life on hold. And it's like, mm-hmm. so why do you want to be a CFP again? Like,
right.
It's one of these
things. It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. So I love that you said that. Let's call it this decision matrix that you need to kind of really establish. And I'm actually working on some stuff right now, these 12 steps and 3 stages that I believe would take a career changer to CFP, which, and you know, let's talk about your particular story, my particular story. How did you involve the people that were going to be affected by this journey? I think that's something that people don't think about all the time. You know, I had 3 kids mm-hmm. that I were raising that weren't quite in college yet, and mm-hmm. I was married and I had a job, right. and you know, it's all this stuff. Like, what was your story?
Yeah, so my life was very different. At that point, I was not married. I mean, I had my job, but really that was it, right? And so really the only stakeholder that was affected was really me, right? I mean, I did, you know, we were dating at that point, but we were long distance at this juncture. Like, it was just me, myself, and I really just out here doing my thing. So it was a lot lower stakes, I would say. And I'm honestly very glad, like, at this point in my career, my profession, like, people ask all the time, are you looking to add more letters? No, it's not with intention. Like, It really is easier the less that you have. Not saying it's impossible, okay? Anything is possible. Anything is possible. However, it is easier the less that you have on your plate, the less responsibility that you have. And so at the stage that I did my CFP, I was still relatively early in my career. Like I said, I was single, didn't have a lot of other responsibilities but myself. very different age and stage of life. But it is something that I do hear from others where it's like, hey, you know, I have two small kids at home, or I might have just gotten married. It's just like, how do I find the time? How do I, you know, do this? And so to your point, Dom, it's just like, there will be sacrifices that might need to be made, right? And so it's having those conversations with the people who this will affect, having conversations with your partner, with your spouse, with your kids, if they're old enough, so they understand, you know, it's not just that I don't want to spend time with you, you know, as my child, but, you know, this is something that's going to ultimately help all of us in the long run. So, yeah.
I don't know how many people, like, listen to my story, but, like, I was working 60 plus hours a week. I had three teenagers. I was going through grad school. I was just finishing it up, and I was trying to find 20 spare hours to study a week. It was like, I said, well, I guess I'll just cut out TV. So anything, like, I always joke with people, anything that came on between 2013 and 2016, I didn't see it because I didn't watch TV. That was the thing that I decided to give up. But there is going to be these trade-offs that people have to manage when you're going down these paths. And that's what I'm always, like you said, I love the CFP. I think it's one of the better designations, arguably the gold standard for financial planners in the profession. A lot of kudos to everybody, the 90,000 of us that are holding the marks. But at the same time, as a career changer, coming into this industry, brand spanking new, I think there's so many other things that you can do to make sure that this is the right thing for you first before you just go, you know, sign up for a course and start buying books and schedule the exam. So that's my thoughts around that.
Yeah, for sure. And I was kind of in a place where I was able to kind of just hammer it out. Like, I went to school full time, did my master's in 1 year, sat for the CFP exam the soonest that I could right after I graduated. So it was like being kind of fresh with the knowledge, like just kind of hammering that, like, you know, hunkering down, getting it all done kind of in a shorter time frame was the way that worked best for me. Everybody's not going to have that opportunity or that luxury to do that. People do take it different ways. Some people do choose to say, hey, well, you know, this is going to be the year that I just get everything done and hopefully I'll pass it and we can, you know, move on from this stage. So really you have to take it at the pace. If you've made that decision, ultimately, this is something that you're going to prioritize. It's going to be important for you in your career long-term. You kind of just have to go at the pace that works for you. Don't feel like you're behind the eight ball or anything like that. As long as you get it done eventually, don't feel, you know, super pressured to, you know, go at a pace that is not going to be sustainable for you.
No, I love that. I love that. So I have a couple more questions that I want to get your thoughts on with this career journey. And for anyone joining us or that was with us earlier, Dom is in the middle of I wish I could show you out the window. It's kind of ridiculous out there. We're getting, like, looks like maybe about an inch of rain today, which we sorely need in Texas. But I lost power for about 5 minutes. And so we're back here. And so you can load your questions in the chat, and I think we'll have some time to, if you got some specific questions that you want Akiva or I to answer, would love to do that. This is something you brought this up, and this is kind of off script a little bit. With somebody going down any of these paths for designations or certifications or schooling or any of that kind of stuff, there's an underlying tone that I don't know that I've said it thus far, and you may have said it, but I didn't catch it. But I wonder what you want to say about the word of focus, right? So a lot of what I talk to career changers about, because, you know, when they're first getting into this industry or figuring it out, there's not a lot of stuff, depending on where they are on the journey, there's not a lot of things that they really crystallize, right? And so I try to get them in is really concentrating on two things. The first is, realize the job of a financial professional. And I define that clearly as you need to be able to take people's limited time and money and help them spread it across unlimited choices. That's the job. And then in that same vein, but kind of like part B, is then hone in what type of transformation you're wanting to help clients achieve. Because this is all about service. If you're not about service in this industry, you're not going to really last long and have the impact that you want. And getting people to focus on that sometimes I think is a little hard because I don't think they look at it like that because unfortunately the industry doesn't really paint that clear picture. What are your thoughts on somebody honing in on focusing, not necessarily on those two questions, you can opine on that if you want, but like what would you tell people when they're giving you, when you're asking or they're asking you for advice and you're giving them advice?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, to your point, this is a helping profession at the end of the day, which is one of the things I love about it the most, right? We think about traditional helping professions as being people in healthcare or you know, other types of fields that are more traditionally shown as a people profession. But this is just as much a people profession as any other. You know, we're really dealing with people's sensitive areas. Like, we're talking about money. That's not an easy topic for people to talk about, right? And so keeping the people, the client at the center of what it is that you're doing, I think is definitely paramount, right? Above sales, above, you know, numbers, like keeping the people at the center, the people who you're trying to reach, people who you're trying to impact. So yes, but definitely focus in that area. One thing I'll also say in terms of focus is focusing on one thing at a time as you're trying to get into the industry and as you're progressing in your career. That is a mistake that I made. As I mentioned, I said I didn't pass the CFP exam the first time that I took it. Why? Because I was trying to do too much. All at the same time. As I mentioned, I kind of, my CPA journey kind of overlapped with my CFP journey a little bit. And that was just a no-no. I was trying to do too much at the same time, you know, coming off the CPA, studying for the CFP, kind of a little bit of overlap there. No, focus. That was my biggest lesson to myself was I need to take it one step at a time. Yes, one thing at a time. So that, you know, you can definitely be more successful that way. That's like, if nothing else, in terms of focus, like those are the two things. Focus on the people, focus on, you know, what your intentions are, what the why behind you getting into this profession, the people you're serving, and also focusing on one thing at a time in terms of your career progression and journey.
Yeah, sorry about that. It looks like I lost camera. I'm having all types of issues today. It's all good. You gotta be able to roll with it. You gotta be able to roll with it. This is a lesson for career changers. Like, things are gonna happen. Like, you know,
yeah,
you have to just figure it out. Not make excuses.
Roll with it.
What do you think, you're working at a firm? All right. We are back from commercial. Literally, I don't know, if you can't find a way to laugh at yourself, then I don't know, it's probably not worth, you know, going through each day. So if I remember correctly, I was asking you what the career changer of tomorrow should be focused on in light of the fact that you work at a pretty established firm. You have people in the industry that you know about that are, you know, already in the field. What are some of the, let's call it skill stack, you know, set of, you know, things that people need to be working on and honing, because that's what RIAs are looking for.
Yeah, for sure. And I also have the privilege of kind of sitting on the interview panels for a lot of our like entry-level financial advisor positions. So kind of have an inside scoop, at least on what firms like ours look for, at least what I'm personally looking for too, in candidates who are, you know, trying to join the firm and join, you know, the profession. So first thing is a demonstrated interest and passion in the industry and also in the company that you're looking to join. So there's two things in there, not just a passion for the industry, which needs to demonstrate. And that doesn't mean that you have the traditional experience or the traditional whatever, but what are you listening to? What things are you reading? What podcasts are you listening to? Who are you following? Like, how are you getting yourself up to speed? And your why behind joining the industry? Like, those stories, those kinds of things go a long way so that, you know, some people, especially firms that can't really afford to have people who are just like testing this thing out, you know, especially smaller firms where they kind of need somebody who's going to stick for a little while. Definitely that's something that I know some firms are considering. And also the specific company of all the financial companies you could have worked for, of all the paths, traditional or non-traditional, why here? Right. And so what is it about that specific company that appeals to you as a candidate? You definitely want to make sure that that shines through when you're having conversations with the individuals that are, you know, in charge of hiring you and deciding whether or not you get the job. I think that's really, really important. Technical skills to a degree. Like I said, you don't really have to come in knowing everything, but at least show that, hey, you know, like this is an area of personal finance, as we know. There's such a broad umbrella of things that we help clients with. you know, maybe it's like, you know, like, hey, like I'm really into philanthropy. I'm really into, you know, the investing side of things, being able to demonstrate kind of where your passion areas are and maybe where you've already started to do a little bit of research independently. That's like the next thing. Curiosity, having an aptitude for learning, especially as a new entrant, is like paramount. You know, can you be taught? Are you willing to learn? Are you here and ready to learn, right? Especially as someone who's new, they want to be able to know that, you know, this is a person who is hungry, who is going to learn and contribute and really get themselves, you know, up to speed as quickly as possible. In some organizations, like organization is definitely a major skill depending on how your firm is structured. The firm that I'm at, we work in teams. We work in a matrix team structure. So you're working with a lot of different people who don't always know what you're working on because stuff is coming from a whole bunch of different angles. So how can you keep yourself organized, staying organized, handling multiple objectives and priorities? And you can lean on literally any experience in your life to demonstrate things like that, right? That's a cross-functional skill that you should be able to demonstrate from any experience in your life, being able to juggle multiple priorities and stuff. And just, you know, again, just staying up to date on industry trends, like what is happening, just showing that you really mean business, like you are serious about joining this profession. And that is very clear, even if you don't have the quote unquote traditional experience that some people might have, that might be competing for the same jobs that you are.
I'm glad you said all that. It's kind of funny. If anybody's been following me for any amount of time and they listen to the skills that I talk about and how I don't gloss over the fact that technical is important, but I just talk to industry participant and firm owner and, you know, founder after founder that go, you know, Dominique, if you can just find somebody, if somebody could come to the table with, you know, the soft skills, if you will, you know, that being able to communicate and, you know, communicate clearly, high EQ, you know, the ability for conflict resolution, to work in teams, all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. I can teach them the technical. And right. I'm just like, why don't people listen to this stuff? And I think there is such a focus on the technical. Do you have any inkling as to why that is the case, why people get so honed in on the technical?
I think that the people who are so honed in on the technical are probably the types of advisors who aren't necessarily focused on the person. It's sad to say, rough to say, but I, you know, found that to be the case, where they have more of a transactional type of relationship with their clients, or, you know, like they're not really you know, having the hard conversations, you know, with their clients in terms of what their goals are, what their values are. They're mostly seeing planning as kind of a transactional activity. Okay, here are the facts, here's the plan, here you go. They aren't necessarily as focused on that, and that's why that's not what they're looking for in other people. And so I would say a great planner is a combination of both, right? We can all, like you said, we can always teach you the technical skills. We can't teach you, you know, the soft side as much, right? We can always improve, but there's a certain level of you know, emotional intelligence that's required to be a really great planner. So that's like my perspective on it.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. So if you're still with us, about 40 minutes in and two power surges later here in Texas, I really appreciate you. You can start loading your comments and your questions inside the chat, and we'll transition to getting some of those answered as we kind of bring this thing in for landing and let Akiva get to the rest of her day. So if you had, and I know we've kind of gone over this, but like I wanted to kind of just hone this down into like maybe top three things. Like we have, let's say we have Joe or Sally career changer, and they are, you know, they're tired of their job because of a lot of reasons. COVID set in. They're like, these people trying to make me come back to work. I am proficient at what I'm doing sitting right here. You know, they're thinking all this type of things. They're like, why am I doing something I don't love anyway? You know, I have always liked to write these long blog posts about personal finance stuff, and I've always wanted to start my YouTube channel, things like that. What would you say to that person? What kind of advice would you give to them?
Do it, right? If that's what you're, interested in, that's what you're passionate about, start the blog, start the YouTube channel. Definitely get out there, do that. It's becoming, I think, social media influencers, it's becoming more and more of a recognized like actual job, whereas before I'm like, oh, what do you do? Oh, I make YouTube videos. It's like, oh, you know, whatever. But I think now people are really understanding the power of these platforms and the reach you're able to get and the credibility that provides you. So definitely go right ahead and do it. My one word of caution is that if you're trying to make the transition into a, you know, traditional firm at some point in your career, just know that that may be a point of contention with that firm, or you may have to work through some compliance issues, some legalese to make sure that everybody's on board. You know, we're seeing the industry warming up to those kind of non-traditional activities, allowing you to keep doing those things on the side. My company is one that, you know, we worked through our kinks and, you know, we're able to kind of do all the things that we do in tandem with each other, which is a really great kind of symbiotic relationship here now. But just understand that that may be a really, you know, a conversation that you might have to have. Some companies may not let you continue with those activities. Some may give you, may have oversight or specific rules or regs that you have to follow in creating your content. So that's also just one thing I'll throw in there. But definitely just get started in any way that you can and that comes naturally and that you're most passionate about in the industry. I think that's just the most important thing.
No, I agree. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. I think if you can't be doing work that you love, I think at some point you're going to have to reevaluate priorities, whether that means a lifestyle shift or something like that, because relatively speaking, life is too short to just, you know, be going at something that you don't feel called to, don't feel your purpose in, and you're not having the effect or the impact that you, you know, your maximum potential would allow. Elijah Juan Ridgway said something earlier about this, something that you touched on that made me remember his question, and then we'll get to Mike's. The unregulated, the non-traditional unregulated side of it, there are obviously some people that probably do more harm than good, let's put it that way.
That is true.
What are your thoughts about where the industry stands on those type of actors with the lack of policing and regulation around that?
Yeah, it's a scary world out there on the internet. Okay, I'm not gonna lie, these internet streets can get a little scary. And so that's why I always tell people, like, regardless of who you are listening to, like, you always want to do your due diligence. Like, I just tell this to, like, regular people, like, if you are going to be listening to somebody on social media, including myself, like, don't just listen to me, trust but verify. Like, listen to multiple people, that, you know, verify what I'm saying with multiple sources before you, you know, utilize and incorporate that information or take it as gospel. So with anything, I tell people all the time, don't just listen to one perspective, listen to multiple, trust but verify those facts. Because again, it is, there are some bad actors out there, people who are out here just giving advice that's like straight up wrong. I'm sure you've seen it too, or like on just various social media, we're like, ooh, that is not accurate. But, you know, and people just take it and run with it. It's so scary. And so I do think that, you know, regulation to a degree, it has its pros, it definitely has its cons. Those of us who are kind of in this space, we know what we have to work up against. But I think ultimately, you know, we have to also educate consumers, not just about what we're saying, but on the fact that we need to be smart consumers. And, you know, like I said, trust but verify information, especially when it comes to your money.
Yeah, no, I can't echo that enough. I think some people, they see it's on the internet and they think it's true.
Yeah.
But the trust but verify is very, very good advice. Michael says, did we discuss what a CP or CFP does versus a financial consultation from a CPA? Since you're both, I think you probably could answer that best.
Yeah. So CFP versus CPA, that's the question.
Yeah. He asked, did we discuss what a CFP does versus a financial consultation from a CPA?
Yeah. So there are a few differences. So first of all, CFPs are trained in many different areas of personal finance, right? It's meant to be comprehensive. They can talk to you about budgeting just as easily as they can talk to you about estate planning and vice versa. They kind of cover the whole gamut and the whole spectrum of your financial life. A CPA typically, like I said, typically will be more so focused on maybe the pieces of your finances that are more so tax driven. They may not have that comprehensive oversight. So I see a lot of like business planning, maybe equity compensation, but it, all in all, it's more so related to the things that affect like taxation in some way, shape or form. There are some CPAs who subspecialize in financial planning. I am one of them. So the PFS credential, if you see a CPA that also has the PFS credential, it's personal financial specialist. This is someone who has gone through either whether it's CFP education, some type of comprehensive educational program and testing. So basically show that I am a CPA who is chosen and declared that I am going to specialize in personal financial planning. So CPA PFS, that's kind of what you want to look for. But otherwise, if that person doesn't have that background, they may be more so focused on those specific aspects of your finances.
Yeah, I would add to that. Great information what you're saying here. I think the public has to be aware, going back to your trust but verify comment earlier, that regardless of the amount of letters behind the person's name, first of all, get an understanding of what those letters mean.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, if available, you know, references always can be really good. Their LinkedIn profile, what they say on their website. You know, the industry is opening up to things like Google reviews and stuff like that. So you can kind of do some due diligence around what people are saying. And this is a reason why when I consult with financial advisors, I tell them to get a web presence so that they can be found talking about what their expertise is. Because when people want to go do more research, there's nothing out there about you except for a website like brochure. So doing content and looking at stuff like that. Because, yeah, I think some of this stuff is just going to be really confusing. You know, FINRA has like 180 financial designations on their website.
So many.
Yeah, and people are like, what the heck is this?
They are not created equal either. Like, you got to know what goes into them.
Yeah, so. Like the fact that as a CPA, I think you got to pass 4 exams and you have to have a degree in accounting versus a CFP. You can have any bachelor's degree is one comprehensive exam. PFS, you have to be a CPA in order to get that. You know, it's all this stuff. Yep. So.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got one from Jada Riley. She says, Akiva, how were you able to build a social media presence while working at an established firm? Did this count as an outside business activity? And how were you able to move forward with your channels? What advice would you give?
Yes, yes. It is an outside business activity. So I'll answer that quick answer right there. Yep. Yes, it was a journey, right? When I decided to start my YouTube channel, I was fresh. I was fresh at this company. And I was here and didn't even know that whole compliance was a thing. I was like, hey, I just mentioned to a couple people, like, hey, I'm going to start this YouTube channel. And they were like, have you talked to compliance yet? I'm like, compliance or what? So then, you know, I went to compliance and it was like, hey, this is what I want to do. And I mean, at the firm that I work at, it's never been a no. It's always been like, ooh, hold up. There's no precedent for this. Let's figure out how to make it happen. And that's exactly how it went with the YouTube channel. Not every firm is going to be as open, but mine was. So basically, they're like, nobody's ever tried to do this before. We have no policies. We have no precedent. So I worked with them to create our company-wide social media policy. And once we got that in place, basically, I knew what I could and couldn't do, what I could and couldn't say, the types of engagements I could take versus not, sponsorships, etc. You know, that is when I was kind of given the green light to move forward with my channel. And so with those parameters, that's really how, you know, we've operated for the past 4+ years.
Yeah.
So I say keep the lines of communication open. That's like the most important thing.
No, that's good. That's a good answer. Let's see. As you were studying for a number of designations, this has to be you because I only have one. How were you able to also manage your workload? How did your firm work with you, if applicable? As you manage studying and working, what advice do you have for someone who is studying and working?
Yeah, definitely having a firm that understands, first of all, values the designation that you're studying for, which my firm does. A CFP is kind of like, we all know that at some point this is going to be part of your journey for most employees. Yeah. So they definitely allow you, you know, the time and space to do that. You know, they pay for your review classes. They give you a study day. At least 8 hours of official time that you can take off, like the day before your exam or whatever it is, to give you space to study. You know, it's no big deal if you have to take, you know, an hour out of your day or something like that. You're going to go study. You might have even have study groups at my company. You know, a couple of us might be taking the exam at the same time. So it's not uncommon. So I think the company culture really is paramount with this. In being able to do this successfully. You know, when I was working, I was basically working full time. I started at 35 hours, basically like full time. Anyway, while I was doing my education in school full time and then studying for the exam. So it was a lot, you know, basically balancing a near full time job with being in school full time and then studying for the exam. However, like I said, you have to find those pockets of time, and make sure you have the support around you from, you know, your manager, others who are, you know, influential, who can make sure that you have the time and the space that you need to study. It's like really important.
Yeah. You hit on something really key that I think a lot of people don't, they gloss over this or they skip it altogether because they haven't spent enough time doing the research and uncovering who they really want to work for, why they want to work for them, what is the company culture there, All that kind of stuff kind of plays into, I would imagine, what type of professional development you're going to do while you're there. Because a lot, I've talked to plenty career changers that have been like, yeah, I'm doing this and I'm paying out of pocket because these people don't believe in it. And I'm just going here and biding my time and then I'm going to leave. And I'm like, that's a terrible situation.
It is.
Like you have to, the thing is you can definitely pick and choose what type of firm you want to work for, depending on the culture, you know, your own moral and ethical makeup and the type of person you are and what they value and what you value. And instead of just kind of hopping in. So I'm glad you brought that up because that's a very, very, very key consideration.
Very.
Cool. What else do we have? I think, well, we're over time and it's because of the rain. But if you guys have more questions, leave them in the chat on this. What I would probably do at some point, me or the team will splice together the three parts of this and make it into one stream of consciousness. So you don't have to have part one, two, and three of this. But I so much appreciate you, Akiva, for spending the time, your knowledge and your expertise, sharing it with the platform. Definitely want to keep in touch and make sure that you're a part of the network with all your valuable information and knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. And if you all want to reach out to me directly, feel free to do that. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on YouTube. My name is very SEO friendly, so I promise you'll find me somewhere. So don't hesitate to reach out with any questions that you have either.
Yeah. We got all, if you're looking on any platform, we have Akiva down, her name spelling and all that kind of stuff down below. And like she said, reach out for her, to her definitely if you have any questions. Thank you for joining, and we will see you back later. Bye-bye. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now until our next conversation.